Today's topic is God's God, no God. Can we accept them all? So as Warren Bean reminded me, I'm always asking questions, yes. When I was in high school, I did not know what I wanted to do in life. In fact, I did not think very much about life after high school. Perhaps I would become an automobile mechanic or go into retail. Then the admissions officer from a private college looked up my record and caught up with me as I was leaving class one day. He nudged me, well, dragged me, into applying and seeking a scholarship. As a result, I found myself in college with a new outlook, actually a first outlook on life. At that time, the professors were also advisors, and I signed up with the philosophy department as advisor, since I noticed that only two people signed up there, and over 100 had signed up with the English department. I figured I would get some real face time in the philosophy department. Of course, this meant I had to take a philosophy course. So I did. My introduction teacher was a woman, one of only three female philosophy professors in the United States at that time. Now there are thousands. And she offered a very traditional course. The first day in class, when this cool, distant, but friendly philosophy teacher discussed what philosophy is, the heavens opened. And unseen angels blew awakening trumpets in my ears. This was it. This was what I was looking for. By pure chance, and thanks to those who guided me, an admissions officer who literally hunted me down, and a teacher who said mind-bending and liberating things, I had found my home. It is still my home today, even after retirement. And I am grateful to those who did the right things and said the right words to bring me home. That is my story, but of course it is not the whole story by far. Carl Jung would smile at that account. He would say that this story is accurate enough when characterizing my conscious awareness. But the unconscious is very real and has its own directions and nudges. After all, I had been raised a fundamentalist and literalist Baptist, and I struggled to exit that worldview when I encountered evolution in high school. Yes, they actually taught evolution in high school back in those dark ages. Though its discussion was brief, it was enough to challenge my thinking. So in high school, the question of what is truth burdened me. No wonder I was in a fog about my life. Looking back, the route to philosophy looks almost obvious. But it was hardly that at the time. As one Jungian depth psychologist recently said, we each have a destiny, should we accept it and work with it. But if we ignore or resist it, it becomes fate and will drag us kicking and screaming into our futures. While I did not kick and scream, I certainly muddled along. We began that first philosophy class with Descartes, the father of modern philosophy. He was a philosopher, scientist, and mathematician. And he was witness to the beginnings of the religion and science split, a division that haunts us to this day. He is best remembered for his famous utterance, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am, a brilliant affirmation of subjective reality. But his most important claim was that mind and matter are two separate and distinct realms, res extensa, extended stuff, physical matter, and res cogitans, thinking stuff, mind and soul. Drawing this distinction allowed him to pursue physical science without intruding on the realm of spirit, and it saved spirit for theology and his beloved Catholic Church. He hoped that religion and science could get along together, since science, in this view, could not challenge theology, and the Church could not attack science. Well, as you know, things did not work out this way. Religion and science were not reconciled. In fact, one could say that Descartes' move was catastrophic. As science became increasingly materialistic and mechanistic and reductionistic, the idea that mind could be reduced to matter gained ground. This reductionism reached its high point in the 20th century when mind was declared to be nothing but the brain. Some philosophers went so far as to claim that mind, thoughts, attitudes, feelings, intentions, did not really exist at all. There is only matter. Soul and spirit were, of course, quite gone by this time. While that claim now looks a little silly, because we think and feel and experience, the reductionism that prevailed then still finds its advocates among many neuroscientists, physicists, and philosophers. But other voices have arisen in the last 30 years, and the field is once again contested. It is fair to say that the view of Descartes is quite dead. Few deny that mind and matter are one reality, not two distinct realms. But both mind and matter have undergone fundamental revolutions because of the development of quantum theory and physics and the rise of psychology. Psychology compelled us to recognize more than the conscious mind and what it is aware of. It explored the unconscious, the libido, the source of dreams and fantasies, discovering how hidden depths intimate all sorts of things to consciousness through symbols that, if understood, nurture wholeness. Physics, put in simple terms, has shown us that matter is not what we thought it was. Newton's atoms, little solid particles, are gone. In their place is a panoply of forces and particles which are not really particles at all. Gravity is no longer a force, but a twist in space. Particles are statistically measured events, none of which can be considered in isolation. In fact, the great physicist Niels Bohr said, "We have only the whole phenomenon, that is, what is being measured, the measurement apparatus, and the observer. Consciousness cannot be subtracted from the experiment." The famous French physicist Bernard Despignan put the situation clearly. Our quantum experiments are invariably statistically consistent. Quantum laws are the most tested, the most accurate, the most universal of all laws of nature. But consciousness cannot be removed from the tests. So Despignan says, the consistency shows that there is some reality independent of our consciousness. Yet all we can know is empirical reality, that is, reality which involves consciousness and is not completely independent of it. So we have our reality, but not the reality. That reality is a mystery. Despignan allows that there might be ways other than science of getting at that mind-independent reality. Art, perhaps. Meditation, perhaps. He remains neutral on the topic. So physics comes up against mystery. Religions have always pointed to mystery. The contemporary loss of faith is not the result of mystery. It is the loss of confidence in our claims to be able to say anything about it. Yet many physicists, not the great ones, like Einstein, Schrodinger, Bohr, Dirac, Pauli, and so on, think that physics describe mind-independent reality. Why? My view is that adhering to the unquestioned conviction that science describes reality independent of our minds is based on the same issue that leads some religious traditions to resist biblical scholarship. Recently, the brilliant Bible scholar Karen King offered an article on about a small papyrus scrap of some lost gospel that has Jesus referring to my wife. King points out that the text does not prove that Jesus had a wife, which traditionally he certainly did not, but that some early Christians claimed he did. Perhaps they were resisting the growing trend toward celibacy in priests, which eventually became church doctrine. Some Catholic theologians so immediately declared the fragment a modern fake, not having seen or tested it, of course, that the article was withdrawn from publication for a time. It is now published. The issue that I suggest both physicists and some theologians have is one of fear. This is a quite specific fear. It is the fear that if we admit that all we have is mind-dependent reality, we throw open the doors to an attitude that whatever you want to believe about reality is just fine, since any view is as likely to be right as any other. In its extreme form, this open door admits equal validity to any view whatsoever. Some will think that extraterrestrials have contacted humanity in the past, building the pyramids, or that UFOs are alien contacts today, or that God is a purple flame on Venus, that astrology is somehow true, that there are many gods, that God tinkers in daily human affairs, that Jesus speaks to us when we pray. But wait, we have those already, every single one of them. And yes, the door is thrown open, but to what? The fear that the door is thrown open to just anything is simply not true. What is overlooked is the foundation of our first UU principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. We are each distinct persons, connected to one another and to all existence, as our seventh principle notes. We are each on a path through life, no matter how we think of that path, destiny, fate, something of our own making. That is why each life is a story similar to and different from each other life. Part of what makes our lives distinct and what gives them dignity is our relationship to mystery. The relationship between mind and brain is a mystery. How can objective stuff allow subjective experience? DNA is a mystery. How do atoms and molecules allow for living, reproducing organisms? The Big Bang is a mystery. It certainly was not matter or energy or space or time, since it banged before all these and before the laws of nature existed. And it was not consciousness either, but it somehow gave rise to both. The ground of being, whether God, gods, or no God, is a mystery. Why there is something rather than nothing is a mystery. And as Einstein said, the greatest mystery is not that there is something rather than nothing, but that we can know at least something about it. The atheist humanist relates to mystery. If he or she is a physicist, that relationship can be found in the awe of the mathematical nature of the universe. Or it may be found in meditation or the emptiness of fleeting existence. The naturalist finds it in nature. If traditionally convinced of one God, that relationship is perhaps found in prayer and contemplation. One may find it in a host of gods, like the Hindus, or no God at all, like the Buddhists. It may be expressed in art or theology, in music and movement, in being open to our senses, paying attention to our dreams, or in community worship. The relation to mystery, whatever it might be, is the realm of the sacred. Einstein once said that the questions we ask determine the kinds of answers we will get. He was thinking of physics, And reflecting on that thought gave Heisenberg his great insight into the uncertainty principle. But the point applies to each of us. As we are, so we experience. Each being different, each will relate to mystery differently. But that does not mean anything goes. We are thinking beings, as Descartes so famously proclaimed. Our capacity for critical thinking can be brought to bear on our thoughts, on our experiences, and thus on our beliefs and convictions. We are each on a path, but that path includes critical awareness, what philosophers call healthy skepticism. And if we avoid the sacred task of examining our thoughts, feelings, attitudes, and beliefs, we wander off that path into all sorts of nonsense. Being different, our paths are different, and we will not perceive or experience everything in the same way. We remain a mystery to ourselves because we are linked to mystery. So there is room for our experience of the mystery as God, or as gods, or as no God at all, our worth and dignity of each individual. Our worth allows that. Our dignity demands it. If we all thought, felt, and experienced in exactly the same way, we would not be thinking or experiencing at all. We would be mindless, programmed robots. We, however, are minds, consciousness, awareness, individual threads in a vast, colorful, tightly woven tapestry. And mystery is behind and within that tapestry, hinting of itself in every thread. It becomes a divine manifestation, veiled in its unveiling, when we exercise our powers of critical thinking and healthy skepticism, even while being open to the experience of awe before the tapestry. Unitarian Universalists have the opportunity to heighten conscious experience of each individual life thread and of the tapestry as a whole, and to engage the mystery in ways that resonate with each individual path. Some paths perceive God, others many gods, and yet others no God at all. We have stepped through a door that does not allow for going back. We cannot retreat into unawareness. We can turn fate into destiny, taking a hand in our own growth and development, and we can support the growth and development of others. Together, this is holy work, our sacred task. Changing the metaphor, we can affirm with Walt Whitman that you are here, that life exists and identity, that the powerful play goes on, and you may contribute a verse. May we be up to the task. May it be so.